So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 6, verse 31. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Mudirayet Nasta Prayesu Bhadresu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamas Loke Bhaktir Bhavati Naistuki Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langati Grim Yatkipatam Aham Vandesh Gurum Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam Sri Chaitanya Mishwaram Vanchakalpataru Yascha Kripa Sindhu Vyai Vacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavavyo Namo Namaha. So this is an interesting section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Is the killing of a demon Putana. Putana represents the false guru who is teaching bhukti and mukti. Bhukti means sense enjoyment, mukti means liberation. This is what the non-devotees are looking for. They want something. There's a verse in the Maria Lila, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakale Ashanta Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Atayeva Shanta. Atayeva Shanta means to attain peace. And there is no possibility of obtaining peace if there is any sort of agenda. Agenda means you want something, bhukti. Bhukti means sense enjoyment. You want to achieve the opulence of the heavenly planets. Heavenly planets, which is full of urvasis, damsels that will keep you company and make your stay very pleasant. And the Nandana Kanana, these beautiful gardens, like people pay a lot of money to go to. Closer to the mic. Oh, the verse. Oh, I forgot about that. We'll go back to that. This is all related in any case, and I will read the verse. The heavenly planets have these incredible gardens that are so opulent. Like people go, there is in Santa Barbara where we live, there is a place called Lotus Land. There's some wealthy family donated their estate, and the gardens are incredible. You know, just many acres of that. So imagine that instead of that, you have a whole planet like that, and full of jewels, and everything is, the flowers are incredible. So, let's go to the verse, which is text 31. Shishuka Uvacha Tavananda. Yeah, I am in, it's still Shishuka Uvacha, right? He's the one who spoke it. Tavan Nanda Dayo Gopa. Tavan Nanda Dayo Gopa. Maturaya Vrajam Gata. Maturaya Vrajam Gata. Vilokya Putana Deham. Vilokya Putana Deham. Babuvur Ativismita. Babuvur Ativismita. Tavananda Dayo Gopa. Maturaya Vrajam Gata. Vilokya Putana Deham. Babuvur Ativismita. Maturaya Vrajam Gata Vilokya Putana Deham Bhavuvurittivismita Tavannanda Dayogopa Maturaya Vajam Gata Vilokya Putana Deham Bhavuvurittivismita Tavannanda Dayogopa Maturaya Vajam Gata Vilokya Putana Deha Babu Rativismita Vaishnavis Abhananda Yogopa Maturaya Vajam Gata Vilokya Putana Deha Vaturativismita Tavananda Dayogopa Maturaya Vajam Gata Vilokya Putana Deha Vabhuburativismita Tavananda Dayogopa Maturaya Vrajam Gata Vilokya Putana Deham Bhavuvurativismita Tavat. In the meantime, Nanda Adaya, headed by Nanda Maharaj, Gopa, all the cowher men, Maturaya, from Mathura, Vrajam, to Vrindavan, Gataha, come back, Vilokya, when they saw, Putana Deham, the gigantic body of Putana lying dead, Babuvu became Ati, very much, Vismita, struck with wonder. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Meanwhile, all the cowherd men headed by Nanda Maharaj returned from Mathura, and when they saw on the way the gigantic body of Putana lying dead, they were struck with great wonder. Please repeat. Meanwhile, all the cowherd men headed by Nanda Maharaj returned from Mathura, and when they saw on the way the gigantic body of Putana lying dead, they were struck with great wonder. Purport. Nanda Maharaj's wonder may be understood in various ways. First of all, the cowherd men had never before seen such a gigantic body in Vrindavan, and therefore they were struck with wonder. When they began to consider where such a body had come from, whether it had dropped from the sky or whether by some mistake or by the power of some mystic yogini, they had come to some place other than Vrindavan. They could not actually guess what had happened, and therefore they were struck with wonder. So when Putana was killed, when Krishna was sucking her breast and together with the poison he was sucking her life air, Putana could no longer hold on to that mystic body that she had created, that beautiful woman that somehow or other waltzed into Nanda Maharaj's home and nurse Krishna. And nobody stopped her. That was very unusual. Nanda Maharaj, Prabhupada says, very simple man. He's a Vaishya. He's not a Kshatriya. Because Vasudeva in Vrindavan told him that there were going to be calamities in Vrindavan. Vasudeva and Nanda Maharaj thought, oh wow, he's such a saintly person, such a great mystic. But this was a mysticism. He was actually a Kshatriya, so Kshatriyas are used to analyze how things will develop and what kind of political situations go on and what kind of calamities will occur. So this is just a normal thing that politicians and military people and diplomats do. But to Nanda Maharaj, this was over his head. So he thought, wow, he's such a mystic. he could anticipate. Because when Nanda Maharaj returned to Vrindavan, there he was, a gigantic body, 12 miles long. Just all the trees that were along 12 miles were smashed by her body. And said, well, this is amazing how he anticipated that. But Vasudeva was actually referring to all the incidents that were about to happen, because he knew as long as Krishna was there and as long as Kamsa was in power, there was no doubt there was going to be calamities all over the place. And Krishna, of course, took care of that. So we were talking about Putana, that represents the false guru, just like Trinavarta, the next pastime in the Bhagavatam. He's a whirlwind demon. He represents false learning, pride. The pride derived from dry logic and argumentation and false learning, really. Like one feels, oh, I know so many verses, and I know this, and I know that. Therefore, you know, I should be proud of this, because it's knowledge, and you know, who has more knowledge than me? But this Krishna describes, you know, makes fun of people like that in the Bhagavad Gita. Ishwaraham aham bogi bala. Siddhaham Balavan Sukhi, just I am powerful and happy, and I will destroy all my enemies, and I will continue with this program. So, as I was quoting the Chaitanya Charitamrita verse, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakaleya Shanta, Krishna Bhakta Niskam Atayva Shanta. Krishna Bhakta is the only people who have a chance to be peaceful in this world and the next are the devotees. And when I mean devotees, I use the word with caution, just like Prabhupada called the newcomers into Krishna consciousness bhaktas. Bhakta means pure devotee. So, you know, you should feel flattered that somebody calls you a bhakta, because it means you have transcended already. You are a pure devotee, you have no more material desires. But this is just the beginning. It's like someone... the place where we serve prasadam, there was a church kind of adopted a homeless man and just gave him a little room so he could have a shelter, and they gave him a title, deacon and outreach program director. You know, that doesn't mean really anything, but you know, the guy has a title, he has a sign on his door. So we have a sign that says bhakta, or Prabhu such and such, or such and such das, or Devi dasi. But this is just a title, really. Just like when Prabhupada gave the Brahman thread to the devotees, said, now grow within it. It's not like you're a Brahman by any means. Now grow within it. So this Ashanta, these peaceful people, devotees, are the only ones who don't have an agenda. Because as long as you have an agenda, you will never be happy. You cannot, if you're not peaceful, you cannot be happy. So bhukti, sense gratification, opulence. This is what the karmis, the fruited workers are looking for. They're looking for opulence. And they want to go to the heavenly planets, which are, as I explained, surrounded by beautiful damsels and rivers of mango and beautiful gardens and all that stuff. But this is a temporary place, very temporary. Like the story of a sage that he was blessed to live. He was a hairy sage, and he was blessed to live, I think, 1,000 years for every hair on his body. And he was very hairy, really hairy, like an Armenian guy. And somehow or other, he didn't bother to make a house. He didn't bother to make a hut. Nothing, no shelter. And when he was asked why, he said, well, I'm just, you know, I'm going to die soon. This is the fact of the material world. No matter where you go in the material world, you are bound by samsara. You're bound by the law of karma. This will chase you wherever you go. So it's dangerous to pursue sense gratification while you are in Krishna consciousness, because you may have to cash it in before you go back home, back to Godhead. And to cash it in means after departing from this body, because of your pious activities and because of your desire for sense gratification and because of your desire to attain heavenly planets and heavenly enjoyment, you may have to spend a few thousand years in the heavenly planets enjoying that. And then when you come back, Well, guess what? Lord Chaitanya's movement is about to end. You know, 10,000 years may have passed, just like that. And you will be in a pretty bad company. Pretty bad company, just to take it lightly. So, bhakti is not so good, because all these opulences, what's the Sanskrit for pushpayate? Kaivalya. There you go. It's like flowers in the sky. It's just a mirage. It's not really there. It's not really there. The whole material world is here, but not really. It's kind of like a dream. Like if you have an ice dream and you're enjoying in a particular way, and then you're woken up and you want to go back to it, it's not going to happen. It's a dream. It's gone. It was there for a moment, but it's gone. So the material world and everything you have collected so far is there, but it's just, you can't catch it anywhere. And the spiritual world has no value. It's just like if you have money from East Germany prior to the Second World War, it's not worth anything. Even as a collectible item, it's not worth anything. So everything that we accumulate in the material world, and I'm not saying just gross things, but subtle things, just like Lord Chaitanya recommended, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim. Not even followers, not even beautiful women, not none of this stuff is going to help you. Because you can't take it back. You can't take it back to Godhead. Mukti, those are the jnanis. They're suffering. They're just studying and they're trying to figure out the way out. You know, they want the ultimate GPS to get out of the material world. And they want mukti, they want liberation, they want to merge into the effulgence of the Lord, they want to stop the suffering. But mukti is not the end. You know, it's not the final stop. So it's not really worth it. Mukti is just a subservient of bhakti. So mukti is not worth trying. And then siddhi. This is the opulence of mystic powers. Mystic powers that puts anybody under your control and makes you so light that you can actually float on water. And you can dive in one river and appear in another river thousands of miles away. All this opulence is really also a phantasmagoria. It's there now, but tomorrow it's not going to be there. So it's not worth it. Just like when Kolavichar Sridhar, such a great devotee, he was asked by Lord Chaitanya when he was having the Mahaprakash, the 21 hours of showing different incarnations to his close associates. And Lord Chaitanya offered him, I'll give you cities, I'll give you everything, whatever you want. And Sridhar was puzzled. He said, no, I don't want anything. No, but I'm giving it to you anyway. You have it. And Sridhar said, but I don't know what to do with it. I mean, why do I want that? I just want to fight with that sannyasi about the prices of my banana products. That's all he wanted. He just wanted to see Lord Chaitanya. All he wanted is to have exchanges the way Lord Chaitanya wanted. Lord Chaitanya will insult him, said he was a cheater. He made fun of his clothes because he had holes in his dhoti. But he was the most fortunate devotee. Lord Chaitanya was walking with his associates and went by Kolavichar Sridhar's house, and there was a broken pot, iron pot outside to wash one's feet. Not that one puts the foot inside the pot, but just pour the water out. And he's considered contaminated because that's what it does, just wash his feet. And Lord Chaitanya went and drank the whole contents of the pot. So the devotees were scratching their heads, saying, who is this person? Who lives here? How is it that there is such a fortunate person that Lord Chaitanya will drink out of a pot that washes people's feet? So that's Kolavichar Sridhar. He had nothing, he wanted nothing, and he got everything. So Sakale Ashanta, this is the idea that you want nothing. He want nothing. We have to get to the point that we want whatever Krishna wants. Because what we want is going to keep us in the material world, is going to get us in trouble, and whatever Krishna wants is going to take us back home, back to Godhead. So, getting to the verse, this is the time where Nanda Maharaj arrives in Vrindavan and sees this gigantic body. And they didn't know what to do with it, of course, so they got some axes and they chopped the body. It's, well, what are you going to do? Just leave it there. So they chopped the body in pieces and they put it in a distant place, far away, because they knew, you know, a body will eventually decompose and emit foul smells. And they put wood on top and they burn it. But when they burn it, the scent emanating from a body was like aguru. Aguru is one of the substances described as how Krishna's body smells like a mixture of camphor and sandalwood and musk and aguru. Aguru is a almost fossil. It's like a petrified wood that has an incredible scent. I actually have experience of that. I got by a friend of mine got from Bibi Govinda Maharaj some aguru from some of the stans, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, somewhere near Samarkand, some aguru, and the fragrance is incredible. You know, you can actually burn it, or you can make incense out of that. And also had experience in Vrindavan. There was a devotee selling incense many years ago when I could still appreciate the scent of incense. Now I'm totally allergic to it. And I asked him, must have been mid-80s, I said, do you ever came across aguru? I never smelled that substance. I would like that. He said, I do. Matter of fact, I have a bottle here. I can. So he took the smallest bottle I've ever seen. It was about this big, lid, with the lid, and opened it up and took a toothpick and said, should I put it on your hand? I said, no, just put it on my Krishna bead, on the bead bag, so at least we'll stay for a little longer, because I'm not going to wash it. So he did that. And I was staying at the Krishna Balaram Mandir's guest house. And I washed my clothes. The times, you know, we wash it in a bucket. And then you go up to the roof and you hang your clothes. So I already had done that. And I went back to retrieve them, because they would have been dried. And as I went upstairs, there was some Italian devotees suntanning there and nobody else. And as soon as I went to the roof, a swarm of bees, hundreds of them, just came at me, mad. They wanted to attack me. So I had to, the devotee was lying on the side of the roof. And he saw the bees coming from behind him. So he ran too. We both ran, closed the door. And some of the bees, they just threw themselves at me. And I got quite a few stings. And some, we didn't know what was going on. And then some devotees wanted to go up to the roof. And we told them, no, there's some killer bees up there. You shouldn't go. But they insisted, no, it's okay, it's fine. So they went through and nothing happened. And I went back, and again, the bees came out of nowhere and just wanted to kill me. So I discovered that aguru is quite a special scent. It drove the bees completely insane. And the scent remained in my bead bag for probably a month or two. It was so strong, really beautiful. So this is a scent that came out of Putana's body when they burn it. So there were... They didn't know what the scent was coming from. Prabhupada explains later on in a purport that the smell coming out of fire, something burning, is not usually very pleasant. But this was incredibly pleasant, just the body of Putana. Putana was no ordinary devotee, and she didn't go to... He wasn't just merging into the body of the Lord like Shishupal or some of the other demons that Krishna killed. Putana actually, because she offered her breast to Krishna, Krishna took it as a mother, even though it was smeared with poison. Krishna didn't care about that part. he wasn't going to fall for it, and accepted her as a mother. So Putana, when Prabhupada says this in a lecture in 72, that Putana actually went to the spiritual world, to Vaikuntha Lokas, and he said she became a nursing assistant to Mother Yashoda. This is it. So what to speak of those who actually offer Krishna something with love and devotion, that they are not trying to kill Krishna. Rabindra Sarup Prabhu wrote an article in the BTG many years ago, and they call it Putana Bhakti, that people want to approach Krishna but with the intention of killing him. So if we are not practicing Sudha Bhakti, pure Bhakti, we may be practicing Putana Bhakti, that we want to somehow sneak in and trick Krishna into giving us something that we don't deserve. But that won't happen, because surprise, surprise, Krishna is also within the heart and he can see our intentions. So we'll never get away with anything like that. So we should be very careful of Putana Bhakti and practice Sudha Bhakti, pure Bhakti. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. There's no chance. No, don't wait to become a Kripa Siddha, that, you know, I'll get the mercy and I don't have to do anything. Just let Krishna do all the work. This will happen naturally. Everything will happen organically. Just like I'm going to sit and things are going to happen. No, you have to work. You have to work. Just like if you want to attain excellence in any discipline, you will have to actually practice. You have to be good at it. Burijan Prabhu was, he said that after starting his japa, chanting japa for the first time as he joined, he said he doesn't remember how many months or years it took him to actually hear the name, start to hear the name. He's been chanting japa for months or years, and he still hadn't heard the holy names. So we tend to take for granted that, oh, I'm a devotee, I wear tilak, I go to Mongol Arctic, I chant japa, I offer my food, I do this, I do that. But how much of it is perfunctory, that we actually don't have the intention embedded into the action? Actually, we want to please Krishna. It's just like making prasadam pizza. You know, how many think of that as an offering to Krishna because Krishna wants pizza? It's because we want it. So it's difficult to offer something that is already used. It's like a Christmas gift that has already been opened and used for our purposes. So let's not give Krishna Christmas gifts that have been already used. Let's give him what he wants. Because there are two ways to offer service. One is what we want to offer Krishna, and another thing is what Krishna wants from us, which may not be the same thing. So, on that note, but anyway, I just as a disclaimer, even Putana Bhakti is better than no Bhakti at all. So, even if you want to give, maybe if you have material desires or you want to poison Krishna, you know, try to do it. Try to focus everything on Krishna. Try to be, hopefully, not with evil intentions, but try to focus everything on Krishna. That you want, okay, I have these desires, I have to engage in somehow or other dovetailing, but, you know, at least it's to Krishna, so eventually they will become purified. And eventually my ears will be unclogged and I will hear what Krishna wants from me. What he really wants. All right, I'll stop here. Prabhu?
Thank you for a nice class, Sarvabhama Prabhu. Just so the householders don't start feeling too guilty today, Prabhu did say once that when you're offering in the temple, you make what Krishna wants. In other words, there's a traditional menu in the temple. That's what you give Krishna, not that we speculate. We have Yamuna's cookbook, you go in the kitchen, you look at that, so many traditional dishes to make to offer in the temple. But he said when you cook at home, you can cook what you like and offer to Krishna. It's not that when you're at home you have to make rice, dal, chapati, you know, you have to make what you like, pizza, you can make that properly, nicely with bona fide ingredients, and then you offer it to Krishna. So the devotee shouldn't feel too guilty. You're allowed, because we have individual tastes. Krishna knows that. So it's not that because, you know, in the temple Krishna eats this, and at home I have to offer the same thing. No, if you like pizza at home, you can make pizza and offer it to Krishna.
Well, whew, that was good. That was close. Any other comments or questions, please? Eventually you will get the gist. That is meant for Krishna's pleasure. Eventually when you get to the point that you are actually offering, or even if you can remove yourself a little bit from that and go back to the moment that you're cooking, for the pleasure of Krishna, that maybe love will kick in. Just like a mother will feed the child and will feel more pleasure feeding the child than feeding herself. Eventually we'll have to get to that point that we feel more pleasure cooking for Krishna, offering things for Krishna, than taking that ourselves. Yeah, Prabhu.
Prabhu, thank you for a very nice class. You were mentioning that devotees shouldn't wait around the Kripa Siddhi to happen, because it might not, and they should, you know, engage in devotional service. So in the same way you were mentioning about Putna Bhakti being better than nothing, you know, but is it also in that same category of you shouldn't count on it? Because I'm thinking of the example of Gadadhar Pandit. That he once was going to see, I believe it was Gadadhar Pandit, he was going to see Lord Chaitanya, and he was accompanied by this devotee, Ramachandra Vishvash or something like that. I can't remember his name clearly either. But this devotee was rendering service to Gadadhar Pandit the whole way. Remember this pastime?
Mm-hmm.
And he was rendering service to him the whole way, and but nicely, you know. And when he got there, Lord Chaitanya recognized Gadadhar Pandit. If I'm getting the names wrong, somebody could correct me. But he totally neglected this other person who had been rendering service to Gadadhar Pandit the whole way. So, you know, the philosophy is that if you render service to a devotee, you're also supposed to be helpful and beneficial. So it seems like sometimes this Putna Bhakti works and sometimes it doesn't. It seems like sometimes people may engage, you know, as you said, somehow or another focus on Krishna and they get purified even if they have the wrong motivation, etc. But it seems like sometimes it doesn't work. I mean, even within our ISKCON, we see so many examples of people who were here and it seems like they were trying hard, certainly trying to some extent, and it doesn't work. They go away. So it doesn't seem like Putna Bhakti is something you can count on.
Well, I think we have to switch our conception of time. Just like when Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur defined the word immediately. Like when we read in the Bhagavatam, this person will get this, or immediately will get benedictions, immediately will get liberation, immediately will get Prema Bhakti. Immediately means in a lifetime. So our conception of, you know, this didn't happen and this didn't work, refers to a few hours, a few weeks, a few months, a few years, but not a few lifetimes. And this is where we have to switch our perception of time. That actually, immediately, one lifetime is immediately. Mm-hmm. So
that's stated. You read that. That's
So this is hopeful. Like it's not right now. It didn't happen. Like, oh, I offered this to Krishna, and this devotee, Ramachandra Vishvas, or whatever his name was offering service to Gadadhar Pandit, who is none other than Radharani, who is so dear to Lord Chaitanya. So anybody who offers service to Radharani will be noticed by Krishna. That's the idea in Vrindavan. That's why they chant Radha Radha and so on. So how is that Lord Chaitanya wouldn't notice this devotee? I'm sure he did. Nothing goes by Lord Chaitanya. He's omniscient, just like Krishna is. But we expect things to happen just like that. And it may take a little longer. So we have to step back and be patient, right? Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Mentioning about Putana, the false guru, actually I remember reading a big article, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj actually warns, because when the living entity takes birth, immediately ends in the laps of, the mother, leaders, institutions, and he goes on and on describing. So it's a warning about the falsity, even within the institutions. And this is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj speaking. And then the devotee who wrote the article says, how is it that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta puts a big warning and apparently it's like a very controversial when we are, for propagating Krishna consciousness. You need an institution. And then he closes up by saying that, he ends up by saying that in spite of all that, because of the chanting of the holy name, and because of the Srimad Bhagavatam, these two powerful weapons can destroy and throw away putanas or all the evils of falsity. So it's more or less, I see it as a warning. It's like falsity in anything. Falsity in, like you said, false gurus, like you mentioned, representing the false guru. So anyone in a position of leadership or mentors or education, modern education outside, that we've been cheated, that the living entity has been cheated, not getting the real essence. So it was very deep. If somebody has a chance to read that article by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, you get a lot of understanding how we're supposed to conduct ourselves properly, also even as a religionist.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a nice class. I just have a little comment. Like if somebody approaches Krishna directly, that is the best. But in another way, if they approach with lust, with enmity, with fighting spirit, with enjoying, but it is Krishna that they are coming in contact with Krishna somehow or another. Like Shishupal, he was so much abusive, but ultimately he got at least impersonal liberation. He merged into the body. If you see in Lord Ram's time, many people they fought, they all went to this, to the higher planetary system. Although they came and they were fighting, but they could not do directly a devotional service, like say Kumbhakarna, Ravan, but other than that, Meghnath and many another big soldiers, they fought with Lal Ramchandra, knowing very well that he is the supreme personality of Godhead. They did advise Ravan to not to fight, that he is the supreme lord, but he did not care about them. So they all took the side of Ravan, they fought. But ultimately the result is that they got liberation. So at least they went something higher, and then they could continue with association with devotees. Even like Marichi, who came as a deer, a golden deer. So Ravan told him that either you submit to my request to become a golden deer and delude Mother Sita, or else I will kill you. So he chose that at least let me be killed by Lord Ram, and that way he got also a higher mukti, or at least he got benefit rather than being killed by Ravan. In that way, if someone cannot come directly in touch or direct pure devotional service, even if they do in another way also, like out of lust or greed or out of, but at least because the object is Krishna, so you do get benefit, like you said.
That's what I was proposing, that Even if your intentions are not clear or not pure,
right,
you should direct everything towards Krishna. Even if you're envious, even if you're hopefully not malice, as Prabhupada defined the word envy many times, if you have anything to work out, strike Krishna. Is the only doctor. Is the only one who will actually solve your problem from the root.
Right.
So, and you will get, and if you ask for something that is not good for you, Krishna will give it to you in such a way that you will never ask for that again.
Right.
Yes. He will load it up with so much stuff that you don't know what to do with it, and you will suffer so much that
just
you will
like
never
Dhruma,
ask for it
just
again.
Just like Dhruva Maharaj.
Well, no, but Dhruva didn't suffer. You see, Dhruva said, I was looking for pieces of glass and I found a diamond. So this was different. But in our case, we may ask for things that we really don't need. And so Krishna will give you what you need, not what you want. But because he's very kind, he will also give you what you want. But it will be so heavy so heavily coated with stuff that you don't really want, that you will never ask for that again. I want to stop right now because it's a little late. Thank you very much. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.